Welcome to the Culture and Leadership Connections podcast. If your job involves working with or influencing people's behavior, this podcast offers invaluable insights into what makes people tick. Through personal interviews that are thoughtful and surprising, we explore the full range of the roots to people smarts that can help you make or break your own career. My name is Marie Gervais, and with a PhD in culture and learning in the workplace and my own cultural journey, I bring the mysteries of human beings at work around the world to you. Through conversations with very diverse people, examining the groups they were born into and the ones they chose to belong to, my podcast takes a deep dive into why people do what they do and how they belong. Hone your skills to manage others and to be a better human being at work with the Culture and Leadership Connections podcast. And now for today's episode. Hello, Culture and Leadership Connections podcast listeners. Today, I am so honored to present to you Agnes Yasirwa Somua, who is the program manager of the Cinquina Community Development Organization in Edmonton, Alberta, Canada. Cinquina designs and delivers integrated programs for new immigrant children and youth. And because they're a Black-led organization, most of the participants are either African immigrants or African heritage children and youth. Originally, she came from Ghana and arrived in Edmonton in the spring of 2008. In Ghana, Agnes was a teacher, and she has both a bachelor and a master's degree in education. And when she came to Canada, she started to work in the nonprofit sector, which she really likes because she's not bound by the tight constraints of a curriculum and can really create a climate of friendship and belonging that feels safe for children. She loves to build their confidence, help them be proud of their cultural backgrounds, and get to know Canadian culture and build deep friendships along the way. And I have seen Agnes animate and teach, and she's absolutely magnificent. And the children and the youth love her, and so do all the parents involved with the programs. So Agnes doesn't have a lot of spare time because of all the work that she does in the nonprofit sector. But when she does have time, she likes to spend time with her children aged 8 to 25, and she's happily married. And she also is an author of many books. She has written 13 published books. 9 are children's stories. 2 are her own personal stories, and 4 are plays that were written in her local language, Akan. Last year, Agnes received the Queen Elizabeth II Platinum Medal for Community Service, which is a testament to all the excellent service that she provides to the community. Welcome, Agnes.
Thank you, Mari. That's so beautiful.
I'm really glad that you could take the time out of your busy schedule for an interview today.
Thank you.
So maybe tell the audience a little bit more about your background. When you grew up, you had a family, you had parents. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah. So from the intro, I grew up in Ghana. My father was a trader and a farmer. We are 12 children in all. At any moment of my growing up, I saw 3 wives in our home. So my father had a lot of wives, but at every moment he keeps 3. So that's the environment I grew up from. I come from a matrilineal culture. So women are encouraged to do things for themselves, go to school, take up a job. So I was lucky to be put to school. I remember one time my dad told me when I was with him in one of his numerous stores, that if I was a boy, he would have trained me to be a trader and a farmer like him. But because I'm a woman, he would encourage me to go to school. And in his words, he said I should go and reach the top. And he wants me to work at London Post Office. Yes, I think at that time, that was his aspiration for me. And I think I've not let him down. I didn't work in London Post Office, but at least I'm striving to make my way up to the top.
I think you went way beyond working in the post office.
Yeah.
That's great. Can you think of a couple of incidents from your childhood that really formed you?
Yes. I had a hard time at home, especially in the midst of 3 wives who are all craving for a husband's attention and many children that were raised by this kind of environment. But one thing that was so prominent in my upbringing was school. I really felt at home at school and had a lot of connections and friendship and agency in what I love and want to do. At a very early age, I came to understand what we call, what do you know? It's like where you set questions and you interview kids, and then when somebody wins, you give them award. We used to do that in school, and I replicated under most of the mango trees in our community in the evening, where I'll call Kate and I'll steal chocolate from my father's store. And then I'll do, what do you know? Different kind of questions. And then I'll give awards to kids. So
you set up your own award show.
Yes. So I was doing that and I didn't even know why. But one time I visited my aunt in Accra, and then I was doing that in her house. And she said, I think you are going to be a teacher. That's what she said. But right away when she said that, I told her, no, I want to be a journalist. And she said, wow, that's big. During my time, school was a bit longer. So you go, the primary school was from class one, which is grade one to grade 10. And then you go to middle school, which is 4 years. And then after middle school, you go to secondary school, which is 5 years.
Oh, that is way long.
Yes. And after 5 years, you take advanced course, which we call, so you, after the 5 years, which is the secondary school or the high school, you write the O level. Then you do 2 years advanced preparation for university, which they call A level.
Well, wow.
Yeah. By the time you are working, and I think when now I am matured enough to understand that system, and maybe as part of this interview, I'll explain that. So by the time I finished O level, I wanted to go to A level to do the 2 year preparation to university. And that is when my father told me that we are a lot of kids that he's taking care of at that time. And at that time, there were colleges like nursing training college, teachers training college, agri training colleges. When you go there, the government gives you support in the form of student loan and incentives. So he advised me to go to teachers training college, and the government will give me incentives so that at least it will be minus one responsibility of the number of kids that he's taking care of. So that's how I ended up in a teacher training college in 1992.
But you're still interviewing people.
Yes. In all my growing up, I was a teacher, the Sunday school teacher at my church. I gather kids everywhere I see them. And I think one of the things that really informed that was that growing up, like I've told you, we never played as kids at home. The only place I have to play is at school. When you come home, it's serious business. You are either in the farm, you are either in your father's store, you are counting money all night. My father had a lot of big stores. So in the night, you bring all this chunk of money in sacks and you guys have to arrange them in different denominations. And it's just like that. So even my brothers are playing soccer and they see my father's car coming. They have to go run and hide because you cannot play. If you don't have anything to go find something to do that. So when I get myself out of home, I try to create some of the things that I never got to experience as a child. And I think maybe that is why I'm still working where I am working.
Yeah, because you didn't have a chance to play and enjoy life. And as a child, that's so important because children learn through play.
A lot.
Yeah, and that's how they develop social skills. And that's when you discover their talents too, through play.
Yes.
But you also learned things because your father gave you all responsibilities at a young age. Did he give the same amount of responsibilities to his sons as he did to his daughters?
Yes, he gave all of us responsibilities. And I think he trusted mostly the girls more than the boys. He didn't bond well with his sons like the way he bonded with, we were about 5 or 6 girls.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we were, most of us in all the 3 wives, most of the girls in the home were older than the boys. So I think maybe he used that, like at one point in 1982 to 1988, my father had an oil palm plantation that was about 50 acres.
Mm-hmm.
And we had 50 workers. And at the end of the month, my father would give me a sack of money with the list of workers that we have to pay. And I'll go to the farm, call their name one by one and pay them.
Well, you really developed a lot of leadership skills right from the get-go.
Yes. So yeah. He trusted a lot of businesses in us. But at one point he said, go to school because you are a girl.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Interesting. So how do you feel about that now?
I didn't like it when I was growing up, to tell you the truth. I didn't like everything that they put us through. I never built a relationship with, especially my mom, because my mom was the second wife. And for all my life, all I saw from her was her fighting rivals. So I didn't build any connection. But the skills that I saw them doing, my mother is a community cook. You can give my mom a whole cow and she can present to you 50 different dishes from that cow.
Hmm.
And mostly, you know, Ghanaians, we are big in funerals. If you don't know, check it from YouTube. So my mother was hired by most of our village folks to oversee, to cook in that are going to serve a lot of people, like funerals, festivals, and she involved us a lot. So those skills really has informed my life today. And looking back, as much as I didn't like growing up as a child, I haven't regretted in most of the tools that they put in my hands.
You know, it makes a lot of sense to me now because I've seen you in charge of lots of different things and you're so natural and so at ease and you win everybody over. You command the attention of the crowd, but you make them feel like they're your best friends at the same time. And you developed all those skills from what you just described. It's just, it's all making sense to me now.
Yes.
That's great. So this experience of three wives and having the three mothers in a home, did that influence your decision as you were older about what you wanted for your own married life?
Yes, I think so. So I think I met my husband in 1992 when I went to teacher training college. He was a senior. We never spoke, but Providence made it that when he finished his school a year before me, he was posted to my village. And when I also completed teacher training college, I went to my village. And my father told me that there's a student from my school that has been posted to my village. So I was curious to know who he is. And then when I saw him, we became friends. That was in 1995. And the rest is up to today. The good thing is he's strikingly opposite me. I am confrontational. I like to scream. Every issue is like on top of the world. And this guy is so quiet. And I don't know why he chose me. So one time...
Because you compliment each other, obviously.
I think I went to his station and I was going through his stuff and he's like, what are you doing? I'm like, I'm just checking. I'm looking for ladies underwear and stuff in here. He's like, what? He said, yeah. I'm trying to see if there's somebody in here. He said, no. I said, yeah. Me, I am my mother's daughter. And he still calls me that up to today.
You don't want any rivals. You're not putting up with any rivals.
I'm looking for people to fight with. And yeah.
But yeah, I don't see you as being a fighting type, but you're definitely going to stand up for what you want to do and what you believe in.
Yes.
So that was really nice little sort of synopsis of things that influenced you as a child and young adult. You're born into groups, right? You're born into Ghanaian culture and probably certain tribal affiliations. And then there you belong to a church. There's religious affiliation. And there's the time in which we live, which also affects who we are. And there can be many other things, geography and profession and stuff. But you were born into that, you know, a family with lots of business interests and being able to cater large groups and those kinds of things. So what would you say has most influenced your sense of culture and self now from that time, from all of those groups? What's been strongest for you?
Yeah, I think what has been strongest for me, I picked that from my dad. Regardless of everything, he tried to put us together as a family and not this woman's children, that woman's children. So he emphasized on communal living. And, you know, like when you go to the village, he will ask you to go and greet everybody. So at that time in Ghana, our parents took a lot of pride in sending their kids to boarding school. So I was surprised when I came here, there was a different idea about boarding school. So when we vacate and we go back to the village, he made us go to greet and visit people, carry gifts and other things for them to see that his kid has also come back from boarding school. And that has really informed me in a communal kind of living. And if you ask me, even when I came here, I have never lived in an apartment. And one time I was looking for a place to live and my friend is like, oh, I know a place here. I said, no, I can't live in an apartment. I want a big house. He said, big house? I said, yes. I want a big house that looks like my dad's house. And so even before my kids came from Ghana, I had a house and I rented two of the rooms to friends of mine just so I could have people in the house.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I can't live alone.
Mm-hmm. So this sense of community, but also it seems to me that your father showed you that status in the community comes from what you give to other people and how you greet and befriend them.
Yes.
Yeah, that status is all about giving and building relationships. Did I get that right?
Got that right, yeah. So okay. What did you bring from home? Oh, I have pencils. Okay, so go and greet this man. Oh, this man got a letter. He needs somebody to come and read a letter. Can you go and read that letter for him?
Be of service. Yes. That's wonderful. So that sense of being part of a community, being of service, having people around you, that's all a part of your life right up to the present day, right?
Yes.
And what about when you came to Canada, you would have joined, I mean, you joined the not-for-profit is a whole different way of thinking about things too. And then, of course, there would have been other influences, things that you would have learned and groups you would have joined. And, you know, so like in Canada, what's influenced your sense of culture and leadership?
So I was lucky where I came here as a nanny. And for the first 2 years, I lived with my employer. I lived in their basements and I went to church with them. And they looked out for community where I can identify with. I lived in Beaumont in 2008. I couldn't find any Black person.
Oh, yeah. In 2008, you must have been the only one.
Yeah. So the first few weeks where we went to church, my employer told me, Agnes, there used to be a Black family in our church. I don't know where they are, but maybe one day you will see them. So it's like how much I was needed to see a Black person.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. So strangely, when they came back, they were families from Ghana.
Really?
Before then, my employer used to go around asking people, what do Ghanaians eat? So sometimes he will go because there's no superstore in Beaumont. So when she comes to Edmonton, she will buy stuff. Agnes, I asked the store, what do Ghanaians eat? And then this is what I found. I look at it and I laugh.
Why didn't she ask you what Ghanaians eat? You would have been the first direct research source.
I think she wanted to surprise me that. So she would go around looking for what do Ghanaians eat. And she and her husband were a very big influence in my life to start with because I left a big family. I left three of my children, my daughter who is 18 years. She was 1 year, 5 months when I left Ghana.
Mm, that must have been so hard.
It was very hard for me. And so Heather was very good in bringing them into conversation, trying to write letters, finding people who are traveling to Ghana so we can pay extra luggage for me to send my kids' stuff.
Oh.
Yes. So she really helped me. And there's one thing that she told me, and I tell a lot of these children when they come to our program. She said, Agnes, this is Canada. And she used this word. I know people wouldn't. She said, this is a land of opportunity. I don't want you to just be our nanny. I want you to pursue everything that you are interested in. And if it is in our capacity to help you, we would love to do that. And you'll be surprised to know that it was in Heather's house. I came in 2008, May. By the following year, June, I published two of my books.
Wow.
Yes. Although I was a university graduate before I came, I couldn't type because I didn't have a lot of access to computers. But she showed me Beaumont Library. She made her own office accessible to me. Even when I was calling people, you know, like back home, when I need work to be typed, I just take it to the typewriter or to the computer place and they will type it for me. So I thought that was how it is done here. And she kept encouraging me, Agnes, you need to sit down and type your work.
Yeah.
You need to find an editor yourself. So she took me through a lot of basic things that I needed to be able to not just be their nanny, but to be able to pursue the interests of my own life.
Hmm. She really gave you a springboard to jump off into.
I'm telling you, and she's still part of most of the stories that I tell today.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Out of the blue, she will call, Agnes, what is going on? Like, give it Yes.
That was a big influence. And they also gave you almost in a sense, kind of permission to pursue your dreams and to do what you were good at and what you were called to.
Yes. And then there's one thing that really changed my perspective. I was so scared of my father, like all of us.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember any time in my life where I could just walk to my dad and just tell him, unless maybe he asked me. So when I came, I saw Perry, which is the father of the baby I came to look after, his relationship with Lauren. You know, back home, I had three kids before I came here. My husband has never changed the diaper. He doesn't know how to bathe a baby. But this is a man who was almost doing everything with Lauren. And it really changed my perspective. And after a year into my working with them, there's this argument about junk food. I didn't know what junk food is. And Heather keeps saying, Agnes, stop feeding my kids with junk food. And I'm like, what is junk food? If you don't need it, why are they in the pantry? And we argue and argue. So I got mad and I left the house. It was Easter. And when I came back, Perry was in the kitchen. She said, Agnes, we need to talk. And we sat down and he asked me what happened. And Marie, until that time, I think I was almost like, I had three kids, I've married. Nobody has ever asked me when something happened. Tell me what happened.
Nobody asked for your side of the story.
No, I was shaking. Like, we sat on a round table in the kitchen. And when he asked me that question, my fingers, my whole system was shaking just to tell him what happened. And after he listened to what I said, he called Heather from upstairs and the three of us sat and talked. It was the first time in my life that there's an issue that has come and we have sat down and talked and there was no blame game.
You just consulted to find the solution for it.
Yes.
Yeah. So you learned that men can do things that have only been relegated to women in the past, and that together men and women and people of different ages can sit down together and solve problems.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, about 30 years ago, I was working with an organization that was working in the slums of Nairobi. And we had a student exchange program, and the students would come from the slums or from not-for-profits that were helping kids in the slums to have education. And they were here for 2 months. So they were a part of our lives and several other families' lives. And I asked them afterwards, what has been different for you from Canada that you're going to take back with you to Kenya? And all of them said the same thing. They said, here the men work just as hard as the women do. Yes. And they come home from work tired and they still help with the dishes and the cooking.
Yes.
And back home, that would never happen. And we want to bring that back home, to that idea that that's possible, because people do that around the world. And I was surprised that that was their strongest memory. Yeah. So it's kind of similar to what you were saying.
Yeah.
Yeah. Great. It's very interesting, really, what we learned from each other when we move to a different place, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Big.
Yeah, there's always so much to learn in the world. And unless we travel, how are we going to find out? So those are great stories, Agnes. I can tell why you're a published author, because you're such a good storyteller. Let me ask you a question about your temperament. You know, that's what you're born with, this certain kind of orientation towards life. But you add on to it, or you change certain things, and that becomes your personality. So what would you say you were born with temperament-wise? And what did you add on personality-wise?
I think temperament-wise, I mimic most of the things that I saw in my own home growing up.
Open and friendly, you mean?
Open and friendly outside.
Yeah.
Very quiet at home.
I see.
So surprisingly, I think, like I told you, when I came here, I wanted a big house and I rented a three-bedroom house with finished basement, and I had two people renting. Mm-hmm. And one guy always said that the reason why he wanted to move in with me, he has seen me doing a show and I was so happy and agile on stage. But ever since he moved into my home, he has never seen me talk. And he doesn't know whether he has done something against me. I think at a point he couldn't swallow it anymore. Then I told him, oh, I should have explained this to you. I have outside personality and I have inside personality. At home, when I was growing up, we never asked questions. We never had a conversation. We lived in the house, and unless something has happened, and especially when I have done bad, that was when the family would come together and then chat, they would give it to me. But beside that, there were no day-to-day sharing of ideas and talking. So even up to now, I still have that kind of behavior. And unfortunately, my husband is very quiet.
So you have a quiet house.
Yes, a very quiet house. I will force him for us to go to a party, and he will sit there and watch me dance with everybody. But at home, I'm just very quiet. And it is not because somebody has done something wrong. It is because I have still not been able to bridge that.
Bridge the gap.
Yes. Now, if you come to our house, my little baby, my pension baby, she's the one who makes us talk a lot in the house.
You know, in my family, everybody would vie for conversation and try and have the best idea or make the whole family laugh. It was constant talking. Yeah. Every once in a while, my father would put his hands down on the table and go, it's my house and I can never say even one word.
Wow.
And then we'd say, okay, what do you want to say, Dad? But in my husband's house, it was just like yours. Children did not speak. They only spoke if they were asked a question, and they only answered that question. They didn't elaborate on it. There was no shared idea. There's no conversation.
Very good. Yes.
And it was exactly the same. And I was in shock the whole time. And when he was in my family, he was in shock the whole time.
Like, people talk, they never stop.
Yeah, we had to negotiate a new culture for our family that suited both of us, right?
True. And that is what I try to do. Like even at Christmas, I told my kids that I don't want to know for 6 years I lived in Canada alone without you. And when they came, I tried to do things with them. Like every Sunday, we'll go to a buffet, we'll sit down and talk. I'll take them on vacation. I don't remember my parents taking us for vacation, this large family. But when they came here, I tried to do all the things that I've learned from the Canadian. We went to Banff, we went to Jasper, we drove to BC. Like we tried to do so many things. This year, we have a group chat and I sent them like, this house is becoming like, we are living in this house as roommates and I hate it. Can we choose a list of activities that we will do from 24th up to the 1st of January? Just tell me where you want to go, what you want to eat, and let's do it together.
Oh,
and
beautiful.
They all bought into that. And that is what sometimes because now they are all grown up, two of my boys do seasonal work. So when they come home, they are in their room. And I'll just go into their room like, okay, have you seen me for 2 days now? Did you come to check whether I woke up? Like, I try to make it like something that I didn't grow up with.
You know, Agnes, what I noticed when I became friends with a number of West African cultures is that people didn't eat together. You know, there'd be food made beginning of the day and people would eat when they were hungry.
Yes.
And eating a meal together is often a chance where children learn social skills and where they check in on each other. If everybody just comes and does their own thing all the time, they have no communal space that they're used to interacting in for social behavior. And I noticed that our kids started to develop, because we always ate dinner together. And if there was something, as they got older and they would do something outside and they came back and ate later, my husband or I, one of us would stay and eat some portion of the meal together with them so they didn't eat alone. And when they grew up and left home, they said that was what they missed the most, was having someone to eat with, because they would live, you know, alone or in an apartment or in a residence until they had a chance to establish themselves wherever they moved to. They missed not having someone to eat with. That eating together piece seems to have been really significant, but it's not cultural. Eating together is not a norm in every culture.
It's not a norm. So for us, like you said, we will cook the food. And when we were kids, they will share the food. Then you come and take your portion or your bowl and sit wherever you want to sit and eat.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But now, like I came to see the Canadian side of how meals, we love cooking and eating. But I wanted us to have that part of having a dining table in my house.
Mm-hmm.
And then see that, okay, we will sit down. And now it's mostly me, my husband, and the little birdie in my house.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah, who does that? Yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting. All the sort of discussion of this makes you sort of think about what you'd like to do rather than what you're used to doing, doesn't it?
Yes. Yeah.
I'm sure there have been many, many times, but can you think of a time when you felt like your cultural understanding of something was a surprise to you? You went, wait a minute, I thought that was normal, but it isn't normal. That's the way I'm used to doing things. Like we were just talking about dinner time and eating together. But can you think of another time that stands out when you just feel like, whoa, this is a big shock. I wasn't expecting that. I thought that's what everybody did.
Yeah. So I think you've touched that a little bit with what chores for men and women. And that shock didn't come from me. So when I came, I saw that in the family that I work with. And 6 years after my husband comes, and we went to Beaumont to greet my first employer. And it was Sunday. So we went to church with them. And when we came home, Heather, the mom in the home, was in the living room talking with us. And Perry was in the kitchen preparing spaghetti and sauce. And my husband couldn't take it any longer. Then he asked Heather, so is that how it is done here? And Heather is like, what? That women will sit and talk and men will cook. And me and Heather just burst into laughter. And she said, welcome to Canada. That's what shocked your wife when she came at first. So that is one of the things that really, really shocked me when I came. One of the things that, and I think this one, I'm going to step on toes here, but one of the things that really shocked me when I came to Canada is smoking.
Mm-hmm.
You know, back home, if you smoke, you don't matter in life. You are like those people who have really fallen on the wayside.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's nobody who really owns a job or holds a position in the community or anything that you find that person smoke. So when I came here, I couldn't keep my mouth shut. Like every time I go out, I come back and ask Heather, why are people smoking? Why are people smoking in the church parking lot? Why are, like, everything about smoking really shocked me. And the reason why it shocked me is that this is a country that I have loved, like, first world, that I thought everything is perfect and like life is, my daughter would say, I thought it's paradise. So to come here to see some sort of social deviance or something happening right in the broad daylight at the in front of big organizations, people clatter and smoke, really, really made me very shocked.
Yeah. Did it feel offensive to you?
It didn't, honestly, it didn't, but it surprised me because, you know, my grandmother used to say this, that if you are going to church and you meet a white man, go home, you have met your God. I come from a community where white people were worshipped as gods.
Yuck.
And then we assume that everything about them is perfect.
Yeah, and you realized it wasn't true.
It wasn't. And so to see that kind of thing, which was so imperfect in my own community, happening in a community where my grandmother would have died for her one eye to see it before she died, really shocked me.
Hmm. You know, we've had a number of refugees living with us, and one of the refugees was severely tortured in South Africa. And when she came here and she lived with us, and I was driving somewhere with her at some point, I forget where we were going. And she said, you know what I find shocking here? And I said, what? Mm-hmm. And she said, on the construction crews, they're all different colored people working together. Huh? She said in South Africa, you would never see white and Asian and brown and black people working together on construction. You only see the lowest class of society working on construction, and they're always the blackest in our community. And she said, it shocks me every time I see it. And I said, well, shocks in a good way or shocks in a bad way? And she said, I'm just shocked. I don't know if it's good or bad. Shocked. I'm just shocked.
Yes.
Not a paradise, but there are certain things that shock you anyway.
Yeah.
Well, we're getting to the end of the interview.
Oh.
And I know, I'm loving speaking with you. But I wanted to ask you, what gives you the feeling that you can really be at your best at work? What creates a climate that brings out the best in Agnes?
I think the community that I work with. To tell you the truth, I was a teacher in Ghana, and I can compare and see what really brings the best in me. It's the people, the respect. When I came here, I was shocked that you get into the bus, you pay your bus, and then when you get down, you say thank you. The community of workspace here, most of whatever I have come to see, is the respect for the people that we work with. I used to tell my husband, oh, I'm so tired today, tomorrow I'm not going to work. When I wake up, before I knew I am the one who said that, I am already prepared with my bag, and I tell him I'm going, like, but yesterday you said you are not going to work. And I think that is a testament to say that I feel comfortable going to work, and it doesn't even feel like work for me. So it gives me that energy to get up every day and go and do what I love to do, working with kids. And like, I think I said I came here as a nanny. When I met Issa in 2009 and he told me about what Synchronia is about, it just reminded me of all the things that I used to do under the mango trees, trying to set a debate and give prizes to kids. And I was hooked.
You've come full circle.
Yes. And I love what I'm doing. And every day I get a chance to just make a child smile, like all the smiles I missed when I was a child.
Oh, so beautiful, Agnes. The only thing that's missing is mango trees.
Yes. No, now I got a garden. So in the garden, we make it happen. Last year, we started roasting corn in the garden. This year, I think it's going to be big.
You know, with global warming, we may end up being able to grow mango trees in a few years.
Oh, yes, yeah.
That would be maybe the only good side if we ever get there.
So the good thing that has happened to me in all my career is to find this job where it doesn't feel like going to read the curriculum, going to find textbooks and find the meaning of XYZ, but to create and co-create and ask the kids to be part of what we are doing. And it always ends up beautifully. Like it's a space that we have created together as a team. And I love to work in this space. I don't know for how long.
You know, just a shout out to the Cinquina organization. I would say that, you know, your team, you're all from different African countries. You don't have any affiliation tribally or family or language. And it's, you're all from different countries and you're so respectful and yeah. so friendly and warm towards each other. And the way you support each other, like when I saw you working together online to help the children with an art project during mm-hmm. COVID. And mm-hmm. there was this instructor who was just bringing so much confidence to the children. And, you know, they didn't have the confidence to try any of the cartoons that he was trying to show them. And yet he built them up. And all of the staff at Cinquina that were online at the same time would just build up one of the children and see how well they did and encourage them. And it was such a beautiful experience to see. And those mm-hmm. children just blossomed because seeing them one time and then seeing them a month later and seeing how much mm-hmm. confidence yeah. they had, how they were, yes. they were able to express themselves in so many different ways because they had that nurtured support. It was just so beautiful. Mm-hmm. And if other organizations can see that and learn that from Cinquina, that would be a wonderful gift to give them.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
Is there anything else you'd like to say? Some words of wisdom before we close the interview?
Yeah. So I think there was a movie I watched. I don't remember, but there's something line I took from it that so many things happen to us when we are growing up, but it depends on you as individual, what you choose to do with it. Mm-hmm. And yeah, that is so very important to me as a child. If I could change anything, I want to change the kind of upbringing that I had growing up and make it different. And I make it clear to my kids. Sometimes when we are talking about certain things, I tell them that this opportunity that I'm giving to you is not in me because I didn't learn it from home. I'm trying to be different. I don't want the same pain and bitterness that I grew up with be transferred into you. And that is why I am doing this. So know that I am struggling. Sometimes I walk to my daughter's room and I'll tell her, I am struggling right now. Then she'll say, what? I'm like, if I am the one sleeping and my mom is in the kitchen cooking, you bet what will happen to you, you wouldn't like it. So right now, where I'm standing, to be cooking and you are in your room, I have to intentionally tell myself, I don't want to be like my mom. And I just want you to know.
What did she say?
She will look at me and then the next time she will come. Mm-hmm. So there are so, especially for we immigrant Africans who come here, there are so many things that happen to us that makes it so difficult for us to give our children the chance to experience the Canadian culture. But if I have been able to change, to bring smiles to kids, so many kids for all these years, and I think we can also give ourselves a chance to allow this kids to embrace both the Canadian culture and the cultures that we want to strictly put in them. Because if we are only one-sided that, okay, this is how my mother did it, this is how my daddy did it, and if we only impose those cultures on the children, they will miss the good part of the Canadian culture that will help them. Because in a percentage of about 100, 1 to 100, the likelihood that your child will go back and live the life that you lived before you came here is very slim. So let's give them the opportunity to learn the Canadian culture and also give them the best of the ones that we found growing up. I'm trying to enforce my daughter to be a good cook like me. I know she wouldn't reach there.
She will. She will. All my children are good cooks. And they also married people who are good cooks. So we've got 8 good cooks now. It's yes. really great.
But whatever level she gets to, I am so proud of her.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Agnes. That was really lovely. And such a beautiful reflection on bringing cultures together and taking the best from each, right?
Yes, yes. I'm
Thank
big
you.
Of that.
Yeah, Agnes, that was been wonderful to speak with you. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Mari.
Agnes Yasirwa Samua is an outstanding teacher and storyteller who is now living the career of her dreams by creating environments where African immigrant children can enjoy safety and friendship, play and develop in ways she never experienced herself as a child. Just as she used to gather village children under the mango trees to hold competitions and award prizes, Agnes now gathers children from African families to help them build a sense of ownership and pride in their new country of Canada. I loved my interview with Agnes and only found out while searching links to her books that she has overcome many other daunting obstacles in addition to coming to Canada originally as a nanny while her own children waited for her to send for them. When I asked Agnes to be a guest on the podcast, it was after having admired her work designing and delivering educational programs for hundreds of children and youth. I have watched her coordinate volunteers and interns from colleges and universities in Edmonton and train staff to run award-winning programs for which the Sinkunya Organization for Community Development, where she works, has received many accolades and funding as a testament to her work building safe spaces for children. If this interview inspired you, please share it with a friend. Follow the Culture and Leadership Connections podcast with your iPhone or subscribe to it on any podcast platform with your Android phone. We are now on YouTube under podcasts under the Shift Management YouTube channel, and you can find us there. Thank you for listening, and may Culture and Leadership Connections continue to guide and inspire your day. Newsflash. Listeners can now interact with Culture and Leadership Connections podcast by leaving a voice or text message on Fan List. It is a fun and quick way to let me know what you liked, ask a question, or leave a suggestion. I will feature some of the voice messages on upcoming episodes. You might be surprised to hear your own voice, but only if you leave a message, of course. So to leave your personal message or your question, go to shiftworkplace.com/podcast and click on the Fan List link to leave it. I can hardly wait to hear what you have to say.